The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from kidspiritonline.com, The Scrooges in Our Hearts. And this article was written by Vincent Chang. A Christmas Carol, author Charles Dickens, Chapman and Hall, 1843, pages 66, rating 4.5 stars. The story of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens begins on a frosty Christmas Eve. We are quickly introduced to Ebenezer Scrooge, an old miser who has a disdain for the festivity, which he dismisses as humbug, and regards as a squandering of his hard-earned wealth. Scrooge's sour disposition and generally unpleasant demeanor hardly endears him to anyone. For this reason, the spirits of Christmas decide to pay him a visit, with the hope of prompting some kind of introspection. That night, Scrooge encounters three spectral visitors representing Christmas past, present, and future. The ghost of Christmas past is a meek and radiant figure with a wise disposition. Through its guidance, the elderly Scrooge comes face to face with his younger, more hopeful self. Scrooge experiences the painful moments of his youth, including an especially painful breakup with his lover Belle, all due to his growing greed and fear of love. The night goes on, and soon another ghostly visitor arrives. The ghost of Christmas present is a jolly giant full of life and heartiness, dressed in a magnificent emerald robe and accompanied by a feast of Christmas delicacies. He leads Scrooge into the lives of the people around him, familiar people whom he has shunned due to his own miserliness. Scrooge sees his employee, Bob Cratchit, and realizes how Cratchit's family struggles to scrape together enough money for a warm hearth fire. He witnesses Cratchit's frail son, Tiny Tim, who suffers from an unknown illness and might not survive the winter. Although this suffering was always around him, Scrooge was blind to it until the ghost of the Christmas present opened his eyes. As the morning comes, Scrooge's final visitor manifests in his room. Faceless and covered in a misty cloak, the ghost of Christmas yet to come is silent and lifeless. It uses a long, bony finger to point Scrooge toward tragic events in the future, where the Cratchits mourn the death of Tiny Tim, and where Scrooge himself is finally buried in a little churchyard, his gravestone unvisited and weathering away. Throughout the night, Scrooge undergoes a remarkable transformation, becoming a more welcoming and cheerful individual by dawn, someone who no longer avoids the affection of those around him, but cherishes it. However, what struck me the most was this. The spirits of Christmas do not visit Scrooge solely to make him a nicer person or to appease those bothered by his behavior. They probe deeper, peeling away his facade to reveal the true person concealed beneath his tough exterior, and helping the miserable man come to terms with all the fear, anger, and regret he has accumulated. These spirits discern a lonely soul, haunted by a troubling past. Scrooge is incapable of savoring the present Christmas, not only because he has only valued the accumulation of his own wealth, but because he has become so desensitized toward suffering that he himself can no longer feel anything at all. We often find ourselves quick to judge disagreeable individuals, criticizing them, and placing ourselves on a pedestal as virtuous and superior beings. We often assume that people would willingly choose malice over kindness if given the chance. The reality is, however, that sometimes people are powerless to help themselves. They construct intricate defenses to shield their inner fears and sorrows from prying eyes. Consequently, they struggle to reach out to others, just as others hesitate to lend a hand to them. Scrooge might not be the most approachable, but the moment we decide to turn him away, do we also become indifferent? Such a fantastic holiday read would get 5 stars immediately if not for a very small issue, the structure. Dickens particularly enjoys long sentences and sometimes attempts to delay his full stops as much as he can. Readers might find A Christmas Carol slightly more difficult to follow than more contemporary pieces. Sometimes a dictionary is necessary, and 0.5 star is deducted for the complex and nuanced language within this novella. This feature, combined with a handful of rather obscure references to life in Victorian England, could make for an equally challenging and unique reading experience. Not particularly bulky, A Christmas Carol makes up for its length by hiding a series of deep ideas beneath every line. Charles Dickens writes with an intense saturation. He pays attention to every minute detail. He is not afraid to thrust his characters into the middle of their darkest experiences, and he tightly controls the pace of every chapter for a wholesome and triumphant conclusion. And the story is not always serious, either. There are moments when Scrooge appears less offending and more comically absurd. The best part about Dickens's humor, then, is that we can laugh with the character as he himself begins to grow. We are encouraged to laugh with him and reflect upon ourselves afterwards. Beneath his precise and sometimes rather dense narration is a kind of emotional honesty that can catch the reader by surprise. There is a scene earlier in the night when Scrooge meets the ghost of Marley, an old business partner, who is forever doomed to wander the afterlife tangled in chains. "You are fettered," said Scrooge, trembling. "Tell me why." "I wear the chains I forged in life," replied the ghost. "I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it." The emphasis on being fettered suggests that Scrooge's fears encompass more than just losing monetary wealth. Scrooge's interactions at the story's beginning and during his spectral encounter reveal that he assesses every action and interaction based on a personal benefit. If there's no direct gain, he becomes miserly. The narrative even recounts how, on the day of his former business partner's funeral, an event seemingly devoid of personal benefit, he conducted himself as a shrewd businessman, minimizing expenses on formalities like the coffin. Beyond the surface of financial matters, this is a reflection of his incapacity to make room in his life for anything beyond his self-interest, and also his helplessness to save himself from the clutches of loneliness. During the visit to the past, Scrooge is transported to the house where he grew up as a young boy. He sees himself as a lonely and neglected child, left at the boarding school while his peers return home for Christmas. But it was during this time that he was surrounded by loving individuals, such as Mr. Fezziwig and Belle. Yet he failed to see the gain in embracing compassion, which is itself an intangible thing. The hollowness of Scrooge's inner being prompted him to chase things he could hold and see and manipulate. In doing so, he created a loop where he tried to find meaning through hoarding money and valuables, but lost himself in his isolation. Scrooge is miserable, not because he is greedy, but because he is empty. Our personal pursuits extend beyond mere accumulation of wealth and also encompass desires for status, ego, and pride. We may aspire to excel academically and secure prestigious positions, attain a flawless appearance, be acknowledged as the most virtuous member of our community, or outshine our peers by exploring the world. Pursuing such aspirations isn't inherently wrong. The peril arises when we pursue them single-mindedly extinguishing our noble aspirations in the process. The moment we stop focusing solely on personal achievement in every passing event is the moment we can reflect within and find the root of all our wants. The moment we break out of this thought process altogether is the moment when we have truly realized the purpose behind each of our actions. Our next article from teenvogue.com. Let this Hanukkah be a chance to bring light to a dark time. This article was written by Rabbi Emily Cohen on December 8th, and there is a note. In this op-ed, Rabbi Emily Cohen reflects on Hanukkah during a dark time. Let's be honest, Hanukkah gets the short end of the stick. How could it not? Christmas is a holiday of deep religious significance for tens of millions of Americans and is wrapped up, pun intended, in massive consumerism, even for the least devout Christians. Town squares, shop windows, and supposedly secular public schools put up trees and tinsel. Meanwhile, if you're lucky, you'll find a tiny electric menorah with the wrong number of candles illuminated, plugged in next to the ornament-laden tree, an end cap of blue and white decorations at Target, and I Have a Little Dreidel wincingly sung between O Come All Ye Faithful and Silent Night at the holiday choir concert. Of course, Hanukkah is considered a relatively minor holiday in the Jewish tradition, with many festivals carrying more weight in our liturgical calendar. So, most years, seeing Hanukkah pushed to the sidelines doesn't bother me. But this year, things feel different. With a horrific war underway in Gaza and terrible upticks in anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, Hanukkah feels simultaneously like a much-needed chance to brighten a difficult moment and like it's out of touch with the darkness in our world. It's not that anti-Semitism has ever gone away entirely, but these days it seems like it's everywhere, from vandalized synagogue walls to desecrated grave markers in Jewish cemeteries to people screaming at American-born and raised Jews to go back where they came from, to college students threatening the lives of their Jewish peers. One form of anti-Semitism that's been particularly prominent and particularly exhausting is the conflation of religious and national loyalty as people make assumptions about Jews' views on Israel and Palestine based purely on their Jewish identity. Whatever their beliefs, and like so many others facing discrimination in our country, Jews are tired. Most years, my favorite part of Hanukkah is celebrating in community with friends, family, and the congregation where I serve as rabbi. I love lighting the candles together, debating latke recipe variations, trading small gifts, and reading the best Hanukkah book out there, Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. Trust me on this one. Is that what we should do this year? Attempt a happy Hanukkah in the hopes that it will indeed give us the strength we need for this moment? Or should we have a more somber celebration? To answer that question, I think it's worth considering Hanukkah's context a little more. See, the story of Hanukkah goes back over 2,000 years to another difficult time for the Jews. The original tale told of a military victory and the rededication of the Holy Temple. But hundreds of years later, rabbis added this other story of the little light that could. Oil in the temple, enough only to last for one day, lasted for eight. The tradition tells us to mark that miracle today by placing our lit menorahs in our windows, sharing a light within and beyond our homes. And here's the thing. The miracle doesn't have to be real for us to take this holiday for what it has been for nearly two millennia, a chance to bring light to a dark time, the darkest time of our year in more ways than one. So if you're a Jew, I hope you'll light a menorah if you have one, or some tea lights if you don't. I hope you'll eat something super oily, whether it's a homemade latke, a donut from the place around the corner, or heck, fried chicken. I hope you'll share the light with the community in whatever way you can. And if you're not a Jew, I hope you'll consider the Jews in your life and take this as an opportunity to shine light on them. Send a text, call, or ask to join for candle lighting one night. In the dark, we all need to reach out more than ever. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com. Rumors, rumors, rumors. And this article was written by Jewel Yang. At one of the lowest points in my life, I felt like I was completely hopeless. Help from my friends was the only thing that saved me during those dark times, and it made me realize the importance of helping others. Helping someone may have a huge impact on the person that's hurt, but help is not just about carrying someone when they injure their leg. Help is way more than that. You can also help people emotionally. Even by comforting them, you are doing something to support them. Sometimes, all you need is a pair of helping hands. Helping people, even if it's unintentional, can be the most life-changing thing to someone, and you might not even know that they needed it. A sentence or few can change their whole perspective. You never know what someone is going through or what is happening in their lives. My best friends got me through the worst 9 months of my life. It started in January and ended in October of 2022. A friend of mine, well, I thought he was a friend, started rumors about me. The rumors were spread by texting and in school. They were not very nice. I told the person to stop spreading false accusations about me at least 5 times, and every time he continued. I didn't know what to do. Nothing could stop him. As time went on, more and more people started believing the rumors. 7 months flew by, and everyone was giving me glares and weird looks. I started to feel like I had lost most of my friends. Everyone became the rumor maker's friend, except for 3 of my friends. These friends were reassuring me that things were going to get better every single day. I don't know what I would have done without them. That is how powerful words can be. Words can make people feel comforted, and I don't think my friends know how much their support helped me through the entire situation. At the start of September, when I was about to report all of this to school, I asked my friend, whom I had known for 9 years, if she could be my witness, because she was also there when we heard the boy spreading rumors. She said, "No, I am not on anyone's side." That hurt me the same way as if a car had run over me. What she said made me lose all hope. It felt like 9 years of friendship was basically nothing to her. Thankfully, there was another person who was also there and heard the rumors. That person actually volunteered to be my witness without my asking. I was shocked. I had only known that person for 2 months. Someone I knew for literally 2 months wanted to be my witness, and someone I had known for 9 years didn't want to be my witness. How funny is that? That proves that there are always nice people, but they might not be who you expect. When I finally told the school about all the rumors that were being spread about me, the prefect of discipline ended up calling everyone involved in the rumor spreading into his office. The teacher asked all of us our sides of the story. The rumor maker started denying all the rumors he had spread. All his friends also denied everything. Then the teacher asked the 2 people that were standing next to me if it was true that we heard the boy spreading rumors. One of them was the person I have known for 9 years. The other was the person I have known for 2 months. Their answers to the question were completely different. My friend of 9 years said nothing. Instead, she started crying. But the person who I had known for 2 months spoke the truth, word for word. After their responses, the prefect of discipline told everyone in the room to leave, and I stayed because he had to talk to me. He said he knew who was lying and who was not. He asked me why I had waited so long to let the school know about this situation. I told him it was because I was scared. He told me to never be afraid to speak up. And since then, I have learned to stand up for myself. Now that it has been a few months, when I think back, I actually would like to thank the rumor maker for doing what he did, because he did me a favor. If it wasn't for what has happened, I wouldn't have learned so much about humanity. Now, whenever I meet someone new, I can tell whether to trust that person or not. It may seem like a bad experience, but if you think positively, it wasn't so bad after all. There is always a lesson to every story. From this story, I learned that it is rare to have real friends, so cherish them when you know you have found them. Real friends will have your back no matter what. Fake friends come and go. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Blake Lively makes sweet and funny post about Beyoncé and Taylor Swift after Renaissance premiere. And this article was written by Ashley Carter. Blake Lively knows how to keep things light and hilarious, even when making an earnest point about women supporting women. And that sentiment was held in a recent Instagram post that the actor made after attending the premiere of Renaissance, a film by Beyoncé. Lively posted a series of photos from the London premiere, including one smiling and laughing with Beyoncé and another with bestie Taylor Swift, who also attended the premiere. In the caption, Lively remarked on how women are often pitted against each other as competitors. "When I grew up, women were always pit against one another," Lively wrote. "It took me until adulthood to see that the instinct for women to lift each other up to their highest potential is the norm, not the exception." She continued, "Most of my best friends are women who would have been packaged to me as threats or competition. It's our job to show younger generations the power in aligning rather than dividing." The message comes after some fans of both Taylor Swift and Beyoncé have compared the two artists and their wildly successful world tours, often putting the other artist down. The ongoing conversation clearly reached Blake Lively herself, whose caption proved she was not having any of it. "All this to say, at Beyoncé and at Taylor Swift, neither of you have to be threatened by my pop stardom. There's space for us all," Lively joked. Beyoncé's concert film debuted in theaters, giving fans a rare behind-the-scenes peek into the Queen's life and Renaissance World Tour. The movie comes just 2 months after Taylor Swift released her concert film for the Eras Tour. Beyoncé made a rare red carpet appearance at Swift's premiere, while Swift returned the favor in London. The appearance of both powerhouse musicians made a statement of their camaraderie in the music industry and beyond. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Sabrina Carpenter gave song lyrics a Christmas twist at Jingle Ball. And this article was written by Ashley Carter on December 9th. Sabrina Carpenter was embracing the Christmas spirit on Friday while performing in New York City for the annual Z100 Jingle Ball. The pop musician and Eras Tour opener took the stage at Madison Square Garden as part of a stacked lineup that included SZA, Olivia Rodrigo, One Republic, Pentatonix, and more. Carpenter strutted on stage while wearing a delicately feminine outfit that consisted of a white corset, ruffled shorts, elbow-length gloves, and a garter. The singer's set list included a mix of her hit songs, along with music from her recent holiday EP entitled Fruitcake. Carpenter kicked off her set with Feather, the song with a corresponding music video that stirred controversy with the Catholic Church, before moving into the holiday season with Is It New Year's Yet? Carpenter called herself Sabrina Claus and walked around the stage holding a giant candy cane as a prop. Toward the end of her short set, Carpenter faked that she was done before turning back around for one last song. She then launched into her song, Nonsense, but made some very festive changes to some of the lyrics. Instead of singing Sounds Like Blah Blah Blah, she sang Sounds Like Ho Ho Ho. She also added, I got that holiday glee, and look at all those presents, that's a big stack. Sabrina Carpenter released her album, Emails I Couldn't Send, in 2022, and has continued to rise as the next big pop star. Despite a rift with Olivia Rodrigo, who was also a performer at Jingle Ball, at the start of her burgeoning career, Carpenter has continued to reach great heights. She's recently been performing as an opener for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour, which is currently on break. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Paloma Elsesser leaves Instagram after winning Model of the Year. And this article was written by Ashley Carter on December 9th. Shortly after winning the award, Elsesser posted on her Instagram story that she would be taking a break from the social media app. Taking a beat off Instagram, Elsesser wrote, Grateful for so much of the love, I also see the hate. Taking a moment to enjoy this accolade privately. And, as always, free Palestine. While Elsesser didn't explain what people were saying to her, she did turn off the ability to comment on her most recent Instagram post, which was her cover of Vogue Mexico. Paloma Elsesser's rise in the modeling industry started back in 2015, when she amassed a major social media following while attending school in New York City. Since being picked up by makeup artist legend Pat McGrath, she has soared in success. Elsesser's modeling resume includes walking in dozens of shows each season for major brands including Fendi, Ecos Lada, Ferragamo, Alexander McQueen, Balenciaga, and more. She's also been on the cover of multiple major publications, including the January 2021 cover of Vogue. Elsesser said in a previous interview with Teen Vogue that she feels some brands are taking the notion of size inclusively seriously, not only on the runway, but also behind the scenes. I feel reflected in what I'm seeing, she said about Fendi at the time. There's a spectrum of bodies at work who are on the tailoring team, who are doing styling. It's very comforting because when I see that, I believe they're dedicated to this conversation. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.